Welcome to another episode of Business Munchies, where we munch on some business ideas. First of all, I just want to say thanks to everybody who took part in our referral campaign last week. The response was absolutely overwhelming. Big thanks to Dipti and Akansha, who got us so many referrals. We already sent you the books. I hope you enjoy them. This week, I want to add that we are adding a new layer to our rewards. If you get enough referrals, you will be invited to this podcast to discuss your business ideas with us on Business Munchies. So if you want to be invited to the Business Munchies podcast, use the link in the show notes. Okay, just one thing I want to talk about really quickly before we go into our main topics, Siddharth. I just saw this news of this company called Decentraland. I don't know if you guys remember, but a few weeks ago, we were talking about NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens, and about the whole metaverse where everybody can be virtual and, you know, like the entire virtual world is connected. Decentraland is basically that. It's already kind of happening where you can go to Decentraland, you can buy a piece of land and the transactions take place on crypto. And so this piece of land is an NFT, it's a non-fungible token. And then you can build on that piece of land, you can showcase your art on that piece of land, you can do whatever. You can roam around throughout this entire ecosystem. I think there are something like 90,000 pieces of land that are available for sale on Decentraland. I just wanted to mention it because it's something that we discussed before, and I like how this entire metaverse thing is now evolving.
I have a quick question. Is this a finite amount of land? Because the thing with digital land is you could just, you know, create more of it, and hence the value of the land is never going to increase. Are they saying this is only 90,000 pieces of land and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why Bitcoin has held value, right? Is because Bitcoin is finite.
Exactly.
If tomorrow they make a bunch of land, all of the land will lose its value and yeah, people won't care. I don't know. They could do it. But if they do it, then they might lose a lot of their early adopters. And a lot of their early adopters are like super fancy VC people. So I don't know. Time will tell. But it seems cool. It seems like a fun place to play around. I don't know if I drop a bunch of cash over there, but yeah.
Yeah, this whole thing about NFT and metaverse, I think we should try and get somebody to talk about it who's from this industry. I think it's something that's pretty exciting and here to stay. One of the takes that I heard on NFTs and metaverse is you're buying all these fancy branded clothes to eventually show it off on Instagram. Why not just buy it virtually and show it on Instagram? Like, why even worry about buying it in real life? Because if all you care about is like technically showing it off, right? That was an interesting take, and combine that with metaverse, different metaverse, and you know, Gucci dropping their bags and shoes and whatnot. This whole combination of NFT metaverse excites me.
Cool. So moving on, one topic that I really wanted to discuss is something called regional newsletters. Okay, this is an idea that I first got from Tanvi Desai on Twitter, but then I started researching it more over the next couple of weeks. And it's a really interesting thing. A lot of people our age, me, for instance, you as well, we don't really read the newspaper anymore. But people love to know what's going on around them. People love local news. And for a long time, local news was read through your local newspaper. But if people stop reading newspapers, these local newspapers are going to go out of business. Or at least there's going to be fewer of them, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of this stuff is moving to newsletters anyway. So here's the idea. Why not just have a regional focused newsletter? For example, you're in Indore. Indore is a tiny village. So why not just have like an Indore village focused newsletter, right? It just covers everything that's going on in Indore. Everybody who lives in Indore will be really interested in everything that is covered over there. People who live in Indore might even try to get covered in it. They might pay you for it. All the local businesses will pay you to advertise, right? So why not do that? And I found some really, really, really fantastic examples of how people are doing this in the US. So there's this company in Miami called Just Tropic. They pull in like $1.5 million of ad revenue. And it's just a regional newsletter that's focused on Miami. And then after Miami, they then moved to like six other cities. Like they're doing San Diego, they're doing a bunch of other cities. They're doing like all these smaller cities throughout the US. I also saw this amazing example of Andrew Wilkinson. He's a billionaire. He has this really interesting company called Tiny Capital. So what Andrew Wilkinson saw in his city of Victoria in Canada was that there was no like Victoria focused news agency, or maybe there was like a newspaper, but there was no digital version of that, right? So what he did is he hired a investigative journalist, paid this guy, I think like $60,000, $70,000 a year. And then this investigative journalist would write all the pieces every day or how many ever times it happened. Then he spent like $200,000 on Facebook ads. And now this newsletter that this Andrew Wilkinson started is the largest source of local news in that city, at least digital news in that city. And it's done so well. And I feel like something like this could happen in India as well. Why not have a Indore-focused one? Or it could even be divided by sectors. Like India, like there are a lot of tech newsletters in India, but maybe you could do one like about the dairy industry in India specifically, or you could do some other industry, you know, niche newsletters or by region, by sector.
Yeah, 2 points. One, these, as you said, these regional newspapers technically already exist, right? The one in Indore is fairly big. They've generated a lot of wealth just doing local regional newspaper. The problem with that, for me personally, it's in Hindi, and I can't read an entire newspaper in Hindi, right? So I can see an updated version of that in a digital form could potentially work, probably in English. So depending on the segment that you cater to, you'll have to decide the language. Even regional language newspapers or newsletters could work really well. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is this has slightly moved in the Instagram domain of sorts. So there's this Instagram page called Indori Zaika, right? By basis the name, it seems like it started to just feature food and everything that was happening around food in Indore. But over a period of time, they have like a decent following. They have like 300, 400,000 followers. I don't remember the exact number, but hundreds of thousands of followers. And they're now covering different establishments within Indore. So any event that's happening, they'll be covering that. Anything, any new restaurant, they'll be covering that. They obviously get a bunch of ads also, where, you know, anybody starting out new in Indore will want to be promoted on that page because it's hyper-focused, hyper-targeted, right? And I was just thinking about it the other day. Why can't you just go out and acquire some of these regional Instagram pages across like the top 10, 15 cities, which includes Indore, by the way, not a tiny village. If you could go do that, you automatically now have a media company with regional sort of targeting. And as soon as you do that, you can also strike ad deals with national companies saying that, hey, I will, you know, promote you in 15 different pages. And these are regional pages, and we could customize the ad basis the different cities that we're targeting. Very interesting model. I think it can work. And the second thing that I wanted to add on here is about your point on niche newsletters. I do think that's an interesting space as well. I know somebody who pays 11,000 rupees for a WhatsApp newsletter where they get pricing for certain commodities that they have to end up buying or trading. These are not commodities listed on the exchanges. These are other commodities where it's the price discovery is slightly harder. So this person sends the prices and a global outlook on what's going to happen, increase, decrease, whatnot. They pay 11,000 rupees to get this WhatsApp message for the rest of the year, for the entire year. If you get like, you know, 100, 200, 300 people, this is decent revenue that you're getting in now.
But even remember from our episode with Akhilesh, he spoke about how he made an entire year's profit just by taking a bet on plastic prices.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have this information correctly at the correct time, you can do a lot with it. So 11,000 is a small amount to pay for this.
100%. And again, another niche that I've spoken about, I've thought about, you know how, because of research that we do for the Indian Dream newsletter and Trends newsletter and the podcast, we end up reading a lot of what the government is pushing out in terms of policies and updates and whatnot. Like seaweed farming came out of the budget, right? PLIs, production linked incentives, what sectors, whatnot, right? Now, these are fairly dense pieces of information. You have to, you know, go through a bunch of government documents, which we both know how easy they are to consume, right? Like the language that's used and everything that they write is very legal speak and very government speak. What if you could simplify some of this information for the business community? Where you say that, hey, these are the various policy changes that are happening. This is where the government is investing. This is where the subsidies are. These are the state-wise subsidies, right? Gujarat, for example, has subsidies for machinery where you could technically get 50% interest rebate if you take a machinery loan. So suddenly the machinery, since it's asset-backed, it's already at like 6-7%, you know, rate of interest. You get 50% interest subsidy on that, 3%. All this information is not available easily for entrepreneurs. What if you make that process extremely simple by getting a team of 2-3 people who are doing the research, who are condensing this information in easy to consume manner, and then putting it behind a paywall? Honestly, it's even crossed my mind that we should do it.
I mean, that's a really good idea. I was thinking about that as you were saying it. Like basically a mixture of commodity prices, these kind of incentives and all that stuff, it would be super useful for entrepreneurs, because I get all these forwards from all these CAs about like, oh yeah, the government changed this policy about something about some account, random accounting thing. I'm just like, dude, okay, what the hell does this actually mean? Please tell me, my CA man. Like, okay, you're telling me that, oh, the government changed this rule 5.56 in this Gazette of India. And this, but like, what is my actual impact? What should I change in my business based on this new ruling? And you're right, a lot of these CAs, at least in my experience, are not able to explain it properly. So yeah, I think that's another good idea for a newsletter. And that's something we could do if you ever wanted to, is like simplified business news, maybe 2-3 times a week, right? All the updates from the government, all the incentives, all the commodity prices, everything in one place, for a proper dhanda person to read on a regular basis and understand where everything is going.
100%. And you skip all the news on who raised what kind of money and all of that. You just focus on forward-looking stuff, which can actually make a difference in what they're doing. And to your point on that accounting thing, I should just add, if people are listening, the government came out with a circular day before yesterday saying that starting April 1st, you cannot use an accounting software that doesn't have an audit trail. So you need something with like an edit and delete and all of that is tracked. And like every edit change is tracked with time and what was the edit and all of that. And the government gave people 1 week to make that change happen, because it applies from 1st of April.
Yeah, that's the notification I was talking about. And we have a couple of companies and one of them is on Tally. And yeah, Tally is coming out with the change for that on the 31st, I think, is what my accountant said. So they're cutting it very close, because like what, 60-70% of Indian businesses are on Tally. So yeah.
So yeah, I agree. I think there is space for regional niche newsletters, and people will pay for this information. It'll be a small target segment, but people will pay for this segment. People will pay for this information.
Yeah, I think regional newsletters, niche newsletters, people want news about a certain, you know, niche, whether that's geographical, sectoral, or whatever. And if you are able to provide it regularly and in detail, I think, yeah, people would pay for it, whatever the sector, whatever the area it is, because people like to know about that.
You know, one of the problems with doing these kind of episodes, Business Munchies in particular, is every week I think about stopping what I'm doing and eventually doing that particular idea, because I get so excited. But yeah, I think this is a fantastic idea.
Okay, cool. What's next on the list, Siddharth?
we spoke about this briefly on WhatsApp and we made a joke about it, but I think we should talk about it here. Amul recently launched a full page ad on plant-based milk and the myths and facts about plant-based milk. The first thing,
plant-based beverages, according
yeah,
to
Amul. So it's exactly what I was going to say. The first thing that they claimed is, do not call it milk. It's not milk, right? That's the first thing that they said. So obviously beverages, plant-based beverages. And then they went on to, you know, went on a rant, a full page ad, man, a rant on like, what is a myth? What is a fact? And I was reading this with Neetika, my wife. Her first response, she said two funny things. One, her first response was, why would Amul go after this tiny little market? Like, doesn't make any sense. Gives them more credibility than they should have today. That's
exactly it. By the way, this market is only like 20 or 30 million dollars big, so like 150-200 crores, and Amul is like literally like 30,000 crores in
exactly revenue. So that was her first thought, and the second thing she said that was pretty funny, where they had two sections. One was the myth column and the other was the fact column. She said, you know what, you could flip it and it could still be true. So the whole thing about milk, there is more and more research coming out around the harmful effects of milk, and that's why veganism is on the rise and stuff like that. And then there's the angle of like, how are animals treated when you're taking out this milk and all of that. I don't know enough about this segment. I don't drink milk. I'm lactose intolerant. So do you have a point of view on what Amul is trying to do here? I know you've been researching about plant-based food.
Yeah. I mean, so I turned vegetarian like almost 15 years ago because of the treatment of animals. And going vegan is something I've been seriously considering for a long time, but I've never actually done it. But I don't understand why Amul did this. I feel like Amul is getting insecure about the growth of this tiny sector. But I think also what's happening is that this sector is not really cannibalizing from Amul's growth or existing market, because I think what's happening is India is growing totally, like incomes are rising and people will be buying better quality milk anyways, and they'll be buying Amul, they'll be buying all these other new fancy milks that are coming out, and the really, really fancy people will be the ones who'll be buying this whole vegan milk. I don't think Amul should worry that much. But that said, I think plant-based foods is an interesting topic that we should probably cover in a future trends. The same, because it's such a huge trend, right? Because you have like Beyond Meat, you have, and I've tried Beyond Meat, I've tried Impossible Burgers. They're decent. I like it. And it's starting to come in India as well. I have a good friend who has a plant-based company that is selling jackfruit as a meat alternative. I'll let that sink in. Jackfruit is quite popular in the South. So he has like jackfruit biryani and he has like jackfruit curry and stuff like that. And yeah, it's a pretty popular dish in the South. And he's doing a bunch of other plant-based alternatives like tempeh, tofu and other stuff like that as well. And this is really, really popular. And I'm hearing about more and more companies joining this. There's a guy from our WhatsApp group. He is starting a oat milk company. I think it's called Oatly or something like that. No, Oatly is a giant.
Dude, Oatly is a giant in the US.
Yeah, it's not called Oatly. It's called something else. It's oat something. But he's also getting into oat milk and he's supposed to launch this week or next week or something like that. So yeah, this is a big trend. I think we should definitely cover it in our trends report. Yeah.
So all these nut milks, the almond milks, the soy milk, all of this is what Amul is fighting against, right? And I think the FSSAI also came up with a regulation saying that you can't really call it milk.
Yeah, it did. It did last year. So they're not technically allowed to call it milk. So, and I don't think they do anymore.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, let's do this. Let's cover this in one of our future newsletters. If any of our listeners know anything about this space or know people in this space, we would love to get connected and go deeper into this trend.
Yeah. I love this thing. I'm personally really excited by this whole space because I think what you're seeing a lot in younger people is this whole move towards more ecologically better foods, ecologically better
choices in general.
Choices in general. And I think India is slightly lacking in that area. So at least this gives people more choices. Whether or not it is better or worse than milk, I don't care as much. But at least that the consumer is getting the choice that, hey, if I want to do this for my body, I have the choice to do this with my body. And I'm not saying that, for example, that almond milk is better for the environment. It is not. Almond milk is much worse for the environment. But at least people have a choice to make if they want to.
How is almond milk worse for the environment? Sorry, I'm confused.
It uses a lot of water, man. California is actually one of the largest sources of almonds in the world. I don't know if you remember this, but about 3 or 4 years ago, there was this giant drought that was happening in California. So there was a lot of people saying that you should drink less almond milk because all that drought water, like the irrigation water, was going towards, a lot of it was going towards almond production. And for like 1 liter of almond milk, they will use like, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of almonds.
Interesting. Did not know about that.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. What's the next idea?
So I was talking to a CA from Bombay who has been in quote unquote investment banking. He runs his own shop and he did something interesting back in 2010-11. He started identifying these regional snack brands, BKG, Yellow Diamond, I think, and a bunch of other players, where he said these are solid snack brands in their regional sort of places. I'm going to help them raise money. I'm going to put in some of my own capital. So he started a fund from people who were backing him. I'm going to put in some of my own capital and I'm going to help them get to the next stage, right? So he put in money. He then helped them get future funding once they expanded a little bit from private equities. And some of these companies are now going public and he's going to make a killing out of investing in these quote unquote non-venture capital companies, right? These were not extremely high growth companies. These were profitable businesses. He found a thesis and he's done this with multiple different theses. And some of these are going to go public and he's going to make a killing out of it.
You can't give the names?
I can't give the names. I'm sorry. I gave one, which is fairly public. But snack brands, Balaji, Bikaji, Yellow Diamonds of the world, right? These are all regional snack brands who've cracked the distribution channel in their regions or states. The Lays of the world haven't been able to beat Balaji in Gujarat yet. Things like that. So he found these relatively small manufacturing houses with some sort of consumer brand angle and started investing some of his money, consulted them with how to raise private equity, how to get to the next round, how to professionalize the entire company. These were run by Lalas, right? And I mean, no offense, but these were run by people who wanted complete control and that's how they'd grew on to a certain point. But what they needed was more professionalization and stuff like that beyond that certain point. And he helped them with that entire process. And he obviously, because he invested money, his skin is in the game and he's going to now make a killing as these guys go public. I was thinking this is sort of in line with what we were thinking with the Indian Dream Fund. Find these profitable companies in niches that we know how the niches could potentially blow up and start putting in some of our own money, some of our, you know, syndicate money behind that. But the world is very different from 2011 to what it is right now. Back then, there was information asymmetry in how do you even go out and raise new capital. I don't think that exists anymore. There is enough and more capital chasing these companies, really good companies with good bottom line and good products, right? So people are getting to them and saying that I need a meeting, I need to invest. How do you really flip the game then? The way to flip the game is you bring in a lot of value added services. So you tell them that I will digitize the entire process, or I will help you with supply chain, or I will help you with XYZ, whatever your expertise is. And we need to find our expertise if we ever do something like this with the Indian Dream Fund. But take that value add plus money, saying that my skin is in the game. I'm going to try and help you go to the next stage of growth and we'll do this sustainably. here's the money, and let's start working. I think it could work.
So the thing is that private equity and VC funds love consumer brands. Like, there's so many VC companies that are focused only on consumer brands. I was talking to a friend of mine who is in a VC company focused on consumer brands, and he was like, oh yeah, we have 80-90% success rate. That said, consumer brands can have a lot of success if they do well. So first of all, yeah, like you said, finding a consumer brand that is doing well and that has not been approached by private equity or VC, that's going to be hard.
So here's the thing, right? Think about the VC sort of value chain and how it's evolved over the years. You have pre-seed funds, you have angel investors now who are, you know, going on angel lists of the world and Let's Venture and backing, you know, syndicates like Better Capital and First Checks of the world and saying that, hey, go put in money to these tech startups or high growth startups who will eventually go out and raise Series A, Series B, Series C. Something like this doesn't exist in the private equity world. Either you're ready for private equity or you're not ready for private equity, right? What if you go down the chain there and do something like an angel or seed for eventually to go out and raise private equity? So find them early, basically.
Okay, so I think you might have to explain to our listeners, what do you mean when you say private equity versus VC? What is the difference over there?
Venture capital is generally high growth startups where top line valuations will trump everything else. And the way VCs eventually make exit is either when the company goes public or future rounds of funding, they will take the money out. Private equity generally comes in for profitable enterprises, more often than not, at least. Solid bottom line, proven business model, product market fit, all of it already done. Venture capital is also different in that sense that it'll back, you know, companies that might not have product market fit right now, but will back the team and the idea and all of that. Private equity is different, more mature companies, stable profit line, stable profit margins, a good bottom line. And they will come in and partly operate, if I'm not wrong, or like have a significant say in the operations of the business and the directions of the business. And then we'll eventually take the company public or hand it over to a bigger private equity firm, right? So VC, think of VC as a subset of private equity.
Okay, fair enough. So by the way, one belief I've had since the day we did the Naturals episode is that Naturals is perfect for PE.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure a lot of PE people have approached Naturals and they've rejected them. That's my guess, because they like to take things slow. But going back to what you said, so you take kind of mature, maybe 10, 20 crore snacks brands that are doing well in like some region, like let's say somewhere in Madhya Pradesh, in some tiny village named Indore, there's a snack brand doing really well. And you, and as you said, like it's a Lala brand, for example, let's say it's a Lala brand. And then you professionalize them. You add digital transformation, you add all that stuff. Okay. I kind of understand what you're saying, and that does seem like an interesting
idea. And this is snacks, right? Think about toys as an opportunity. We've realized that toys in India are going to be big. Do you go to some of these younger companies? So I'll give you an example. There's this company in Dehradun which made a card game called Minimize. They created this card game. They manufacture this thing. And I played this game with my nephew. I absolutely love the game. What if you find these unique companies that don't need venture capital money, right? They don't need to be under the pressure of like, you know, very extremely high top line, grow so that you can go raise the next round. They can be stable businesses. What if you go partner with them and say, take some of my money and I'll help you reach more markets. I'll help you reach the US market. I have in-house sort of teams that will help you reach, you know, newer markets, something like that. Figure out the value add and go to these more stable, profitable unit economic companies and put in money to help them get to the next stage.
My biggest worry is just how do you find these people, right? Because these are small companies in small places. How do you find them? That's my only question. Because I like the idea generally, but is like, how are you going to source your deals?
Through this podcast. That's exactly why we're doing the podcast, Sahil. No, but in all honesty, I think deal flow is the differentiator in this market, and it's going to be a combination of inbound and outbound. It's extremely hard for the first year or two, but as you go out, meet more people, leave an impression on the value that you can bring to the table, you start getting a lot of inbound requests as well, right? Because you are operating in a space where there are not a lot of active investors. You get referred around a lot and you start getting inbound deal flow, right? So this is obviously a 5-7-10 year play, because even the CA person that I met started investing back in 2010-11, realistically started seeing returns in 17-18, or some of the returns in 17-18, and most of it is when these companies go public in a couple of years. So it is a long game.
So I'll tell you, I've actually been approached for something like this. So for my electrical manufacturing company, somebody came to us and they were basically doing something similar. They had a fund of, I want to say 100, 200 crores that he had already raised or he'd gotten commitments. And he was basically going out and he was taking part equity, like 25-30% of a bunch of different companies in the electrical field. He was specifically only looking at the electrical field. And then he basically wanted to combine all these companies together and then do an IPO eventually, and basically use the cash infusions partly to give the owners some liquidity and partly to, I guess, also help grow the companies. But his viewpoint was purely from the idea of doing an IPO of a large company, not really of, you know, like modernizing and all that stuff. I think that is a better model of modernizing, getting them more efficient before even talking about an
100%. One of my friends runs a chemical manufacturing company. Most of his business is B2B today, but he's now trying to start a regional Harpic brand, right? Like he knows the formulations and everything. And he said, I could create this. Why am I not creating this for like the tier 2, tier 3 segments, right? And let's say a year down the line, when he's created this product and has some sort of distribution already set in, he will require capital to go to other regions, right? He's not a venture capital target, right? Because this is not what venture capital is going to put in money. He could either raise debt, which comes with its own risk, but he needs the assets to raise that debt. Where else does that person go? You could technically find these companies, is my hypothesis today. I don't know. Let's see. All right. Thank you so much for listening to us munch on some of these business ideas. If you have any suggestions on some ideas that we should cover, leave us a note on our email or Twitter DMs. Both our DMs are open. The Twitter links are in the show notes. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple, follow us on Spotify, and please leave us a rating on Apple. We are at 43 ratings. The new bet that Sahil and I have is, how soon do we get to 50 ratings? I want to win this again. So leave us a rating.